What's up, comic book fans? Pete here from Comic Books Transformed, where me and my good friend Brian over there discuss comic book adaptations into movies and streaming shows. Brian, did you know there's actually a bunch of Dune comics?
I was going to ask you that. I did not know that.
Yeah. So Dune, right? It was written by Frank Herbert, but his son still makes Dune books. There hasn't been one in a while, but he's written a whole bunch with Kevin J. Anderson. And they've adapted a bunch of those into comic books.
Nice.
Yeah, the artwork is really awesome.
Who puts those out?
I think Boom. Boom, okay. That sounds silly, right? Boom puts out Dune. Yeah. But like sometimes they have covers by like Jay Lee. Do you know Jay Lee?
Yeah, I know Jay Lee. Yeah, that's cool.
He's like one of my favorite artists.
Yeah, I has he done Transformers stuff? He might have.
I think he did like
back in the day, like the Transformers G.I. Joe stuff.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Yes. So, is it freezing?
No, freezing. Oh. I was just nodding.
Okay, perfect, perfect.
Great audio content by me.
Yes. So let's have this quality show keep running. Brian just went on a Dune Odyssey.
Because that's correct. Prior to about 2 weeks ago, I had never seen anything Dune before in my life.
Yes.
I've had the DVD of the 1984 David Lynch Dune. Someone gave it to us a long time ago, told us to watch it, and we never did.
Okay.
But it's been on my DVD shelf forever. I still have not watched it because I watched it on HBO Max. But, oh, wow. I'm a convert. I'm all on this Dune train ride here, and so is my wife now too. She might be more obsessed than I am.
Whoa, that's cool. She's into it, huh?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Well, now you guys have to sit together and watch the, I believe, 4-hour Sci-Fi Channel miniseries.
Well, first I'm going to finish what is it called? The documentary you told me to watch, Jodorowsky's Dune.
Yeah, you're watching that?
I'm going to do that first. I got like 10 minutes into it, and I'm like, there's too many subtitles. I need to actually focus on this.
So. Don't you hate that when you actually have to watch a movie?
Yeah, you have to sit and watch and not multitask on something.
Yes. I know that drill too much. Every time it's like in another language, I'm like, oh, shit, I got to actually pay attention.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different languages in the Dune movie by Denis Villeneuve. I believe that's how you say his last name. How have you been pronouncing it?
I say Denis, and I probably change Villeneuve. I used to say Villeneuve. I don't know.
Shit. Yeah.
I could be totally wrong. I'm guessing. So maybe you're right. Maybe I'm most likely wrong, honestly.
Well, let's see. I could do one of those things where it's like, how do you pronounce it? It comes up. Okay. But anyway, I think I just put the ticker on the bottom that says that if you combine the David Lynch Dune, the Sci-Fi Channel Dune, and this movie, then you get the Dune book, right?
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I can play it right now. Denis Villeneuve. How do you play this? Denis Villeneuve. That's how you say it.
Denis Villeneuve. Okay, so we were both like partially right.
And partially wrong, yeah.
Yeah, so there,
sounds like our show.
That's our
Yes. So I'm a big Dune fan, just to let people know. I've read a ton of the books. There's like 6 books by Frank Herbert, the original author, and the first one came out in the 60s. I've read 4 of the original 6 Frank Herbert books, and I've read a whole bunch of the books that his son put out with Kevin J. Anderson. I've seen the David Lynch one. That was my first experience with Dune, was watching the David Lynch version, and I watched it a whole bunch of times as a kid.
That's an interesting movie to watch as a kid.
Yes. Well, when you're a little kid and, you know, you like Transformers and Thundercats, all that kind of shit, and then you watch this movie where like a guild navigator comes out in the very beginning and it looks like this big fucking weird fetus, you know, in a tube. And there's all these bald guys like just sweeping around him. Did you think that was fucking weird? It's like a grown man watching that.
Yes, but I loved it. Yeah. I'm a sucker for practical effects.
Yes.
Like just the fact that that was all done like there. I'm sure there's some effects in there, you know, for that tank and all that. But still, like that was all done like, you know, live in real life. Like I love that kind of stuff. I don't care if it doesn't look as good as CG sometimes or whatever. I don't really care. I still prefer that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. There's a documentary, not a documentary, a book that's just based on David Lynch's Dune, and I think it's called like Masterpiece in Failure or something like that. I don't know, something like that. But I really want to look it up and see the behind the scenes. Like David Lynch, I read his book, his like little memoir, and like he straight up says that, like, you know, Dune is sort of like his failure, or he has regrets about Dune. But I think that for many, many people, it's the gateway into this franchise.
Yeah, I mean, that was the first thing I watched. So
so when you were watching it, what was the most challenging thing to kind of get into or like understand, or like what was confusing watching that first one?
Honestly, nothing. Because the Lynch one explains everything so much more than the new one does. Like, my wife watched the Denis Villeneuve part one. Anyways, want to see my bucket? I tried getting the popcorn bucket. They just sold out, they said. So, go back again and try on doing two, maybe.
I went to Regal. I didn't get a chance to buy one, but believe me, Danny and I have referenced his Dune anus popcorn bucket multiple times on the
last. I want it. I need to get one. I'll find it.
Okay. Nice. 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 Go ahead. What were you saying?
Oh yes. So I found that the David Lynch one kind of maybe even over explains everything, especially in the first half of the movie, you know, up until the sneak attack on House Atreides by House Harkonnen. And my wife watched the new part one first, and she was kind of confused. But then we watched the first half of that same thing in the Lynch one. She's like, "Oh my god, all of this clicks now."
Yes, yes. What's kind of amazing about the David Lynch version is that it has like the people's thoughts when they're, you know, like there's a lot of like voiceover of like what people are thinking, and that goes a long way because it's like taken straight from the book. So, you know, like, oh, okay, this is what this person's thinking. This kind of explains what's going on here. Did you know? I don't know. I mean, for people that are really into Dune, they're going to be like, I know this beat. Shut the fuck up. But I don't know if you knew this, Brian. Like, when the Lynch movie came out, they actually handed out flyers that like explained the Dune world.
Oh, wow. No, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, like you go to the theater, and instead of getting a popcorn bucket that looks like an anus, you got this sheet that was like, these are the Fremen, these are the Bene Gesserit, these are, you know?
Yeah. Wow. I would love to see one of those. Who would that look like? I'll probably look that up after this recording.
Nice, man. So let's kind of do this thing where we talk about Dune Part 2 that just came out, but we can also kind of reference the David Lynch version, too, while we're talking about it.
Oh, right, well, the one thing I want to say overall about the Lynch version, I really, really love that first half of the Lynch version, but the second half is so compressed. It feels so weird. And like, I would honestly compare, like, you know, comparatively rate the first half of that movie with the first new one. But this second one is leagues beyond the second half of the Lynch movie.
That is very, very well put. And it's interesting too, because like, The first Denis Villeneuve movie is like Paul and Jessica get to the desert and get with the Fremen. And that's, I'd say it's even like a little bit more than the halfway point in the David Lynch version. And then like, I think in the book, they're with the Fremen for years. And then there's that battle. Because one thing, okay, so let's just go into spoilers. One thing that's different is that Paul's sister, Talia,
isn't it Aaliyah?
I'm thinking fucking Batman. Jesus Christ. Yeah. Aaliyah. She is like a girl by the time the final battle happens.
Yes.
And so, like in this, she's not even born. She doesn't get born in the Denis Villeneuve one.
Yeah, that's an interesting change. And I think that's fine. It works. I mean, they're basically saying that instead of him being there for years, he's there for maybe half a year or something like that.
Yeah, not even. Yeah. And I mean, it makes sense for him to have so much power in the David Lynch version of like the persuasion over the Fremen. because he's with them for a while. But in this movie, holy shit, do they like play up how he like essentially like takes over, you know, that's like, that's really the main focus of the movie is like him taking over the Fremen.
Yeah. And basically him weighing if he wants to or not.
Right.
Based
right.
on previous visions.
Yeah. So we'll get into that when we get further in the movie. But for now, with the David Lynch version, I think it starts with like Virginia Madsen as Princess Irulan or whatever, Irulan. She's given like a narration. Did you like that in the David Lynch version?
Yes, I did. I think I did find the internal monologues to be a bit too much in the Lynch version overall.
Yeah.
But I think the Princess Irulan ones make a lot of sense. Like, she seems like the narrator. And I think you've mentioned that in the books, that she does narrate a lot of the beginning of the chapters or something like that.
Right, exactly. Yes. So yeah.
That didn't feel weird to me, but it was just like a little bit too much narration. And I get that that's also why I understood the plot better mm-hmm. because of it. But at the same time, it's like a little off-putting.
Yeah. No, you're 100% right. Like, it's like too much. It's like overwhelming.
Yeah.
But one thing we haven't mentioned is the music from the David Lynch version. Are you a fan of that?
Yeah, it's very good. Yes. Although yeah. I have to say too, like I kind of dig the overall theme, the main theme of the newer version too. And, I saw it in one of those like fancy Dolby theaters that has like the surround sound and all that.
Yeah.
Man, did that add to the movie.
I'm sure.
Like the seats rumbling when that scene's playing, when those scenes are playing, like the worms come out, all that shit. Oh my God.
nice. Yeah. Hans Zimmer is the composer for Dune, the modern ones. But then the one from 1984 is Toto. Like
Toto,
the
band, yeah. Toto.
You know, for those of you kids that are way younger than me and Brian, like they do Africa, that song that like Weezer covered, right?
Yes.
But I just remember as like a young kid watching it and just like that theme of like, dun, 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 dun. I was like, oh my God, this is so good. And like, I love that narration with Princess Irulan where she's like talking about the whole thing and the music like kind of accentuates her points that she's saying. And then at the very end, she's like, the planet known as Arrakis, also known as Dune. And the music like kicks in and goes right in your face. I'm like, yeah. Let's fucking do this. Let's go, Kyle MacLachlan. I'm ready. But then you have this subdued beginning with Florence Pugh. And I wanted to see what you thought of Florence Pugh, because she's basically an addition in this movie. She's not in the first movie at all.
Yeah. I mean, I thought she was good. She wasn't in the movie as much as I was expecting.
Right.
I mean, there's somebody else in the movie that is even less of, I would say. But we'll get to that later. I guess what I really appreciated the most was her weird costumes.
Yes.
And I guess just her view on the Empire is a little different than like her father's and everything else. Like, she seems a little more, I don't know, conscientious about things.
Yeah.
So.
Well, let me ask you this. Like, from watching the Lynch version and watching this movie, like, what do you think of the Bene Gesserit sisters?
The manager, they seem fairly similar to both versions, I think. I don't think they really changed very much.
Right.
I think the idea of it is interesting. It's just they don't have like a plan. They're just kind of guiding something. Like, they're trying to create this super being, which is almost a weird thing to say. It's like you say that without knowing about it or watching the movies, and you think that sounds weird and lame, but it's actually kind of awesome.
Yes.
It's an interesting way for a group to a group in power to have relevance in a world here. Like, they don't have a goal necessarily. It's just like they're kind of guiding something to a point rather than directly influencing it.
That's an interesting way of putting that. I don't know if you can kind of glean this from either version. I don't think you can, but in the books, basically what happens is in the far future, artificial intelligence takes over. Like, robots take over and enslave humanity, kill off a lot of humanity. Humans have an uprising. It's called the Butlerian Jihad. and they are able to destroy the robots, and they wipe them out completely. It becomes a religion that like artificial intelligence can't exist, and if you have anything that resembles artificial intelligence, you could get in trouble. They kind of reference this in the David Lynch version. They talk about like this planet called Ix.
Yes, say, like, I was going to ask you about that. They say in the very beginning.
Yeah, they say many machines on Ix. They say that. Yeah, and that's like the planet that's like the closest to being like technologically advanced, but they can't go to a certain point, you know?
Yeah.
And so like, and I'm sorry for lecturing, but like with Dune, what's interesting is that there's all these different types of humans, and they're essentially like people that have been like altered in labs, but then they've also just been like raised for generations. The Bene Gesserit are like one type. Then there's these people called the Talaxu, which like, do you remember that in the Brad Dourif, the David Lynch version, where there's like Brad Dourif and he has like the purple lips?
Yes. And then there was a guy on the other side too. I can't remember his name.
Thufir Holland. Yeah.
They were like the Mentats, right?
Right. So now let me ask you this. Do you remember in the Denis Villeneuve version where it's like David Dashmalin or whatever, however you say his name? Yeah.
He was one of them, right?
Piter. That's right. And then there's that African-American actor who's in the first one, but then he's not in the second one at all.
Yeah. Like there's no presence of that whatsoever in this one.
Yeah. But he's that guy that has like the little umbrella in the first one. And like, there's this one cool part where he's like processing something and his eyes like, go like that for a second, roll into his head.
Yes.
Yeah. So those are Mentats, and they're basically like people that are like supercomputers, but there's no robotics. It's just that they've like biologically become like supercomputers.
Yes. And very interesting. So obviously you've read the books there. How were they physically described in the books? Because they had a very unique look in the Lynch version. And they looked very much more plain in this.
Yes. So in the David Lynch version, they have like purple lips and stuff. They don't really talk about like their hair or like the rest of their body, but they always focus on those purple lips because they drink this juice. It's called like Sappho juice, and it stains their lips.
Yeah, I remember the little, he says the little line, Piter DeVries?
Yeah, there you go. That works.
In the Lynch version. Yeah, he says that little like thing there.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, they're cool. There's the Bene Gesserit, but basically there's like at least four different types of people that like they are just these like they do the functions of robots and stuff, you know? Yeah. And the Bene Gesserit, they have basically been like manipulating bloodlines for like thousands of years, and they can control their own body chemistry. And they're like, okay, I'm going to have a girl now, or, oh, we need to have a boy. And so they can like literally change the sex of the kid.
Yeah. You know? They sort of imply that in the Lynch one more so than actually show it. I feel like in this new one here, like the scene where Jessica takes the water of life, is that what you call it?
That is, that's what you call it. Yes.
Well, like later on, there's some exposition from Paul saying like, oh, that's a ability they have. They can transmute poisons or something like that in their own body. And like that was much more clear in this newer version than the previous one. Like they mentioned that, you know, they keep mentioning in the Lynch version, like, oh, you're supposed to only give him a girl or whatever. And, or, you know, and they didn't really say that like they could do that. They just kind of imply it.
Right. Yeah, there's all this stuff that's like implied, and in the Denis Villeneuve version, it's like really, really stripped down. Like when you look at everything, like the spaceships, the suits and everything is like the most basic thing. Like Harkonnens are all just black. You know, the Atreides are kind of like just gray and black or whatever. The Fremen are just like gray and kind of sandy looking. Like there's like no like purple or red or anything like that. The Sardaukar are white.
Yeah, there's not a lot of color going on.
No. And then, like, if you ever watch the Sci-Fi Channel version, it's like, you know, all colorful and weird. And they show the Imperial Court a lot more. And there's, you know, all these weird costumes. And that's kind of what Dune feels like to me. It's like, oh, well, there should be all these weird costumes and stuff. But,
weird costumes on the, you know, with the Emperor on that planet. Like there was even some green on that one of those scenes.
Whoa. Yeah. And I like how you kind of brought it back to the ticker too. Like there's the Emperor in the David Lynch version, and to me, that's kind of like what the Emperor is like. I always think of that guy.
Okay.
And then I feel like he's very different from the Christopher Walken version, right?
Very different, but I think I feel like the Christopher Walken version is more regal. Like he, like the Emperor in the Lynch version just feels like a military guy. Like his clothing is even not even that different from the Atreides clothing,
You know,
dress. So it's like he almost felt like he was like a regular dude. And there's this, how he was reporting to that navigator in the Lynch version. It just made him seem like not the Emperor of the known universe, like his title implies. You know?
Yes. Oh, Brian, I have to apologize to you because I'm just like fucking lecturing you so much this morning. You're probably sitting there thinking like, oh my God, kill me now. But like when I was talking about all the different people that have been like modified or like enhanced with spice and stuff, we should talk about those guild navigators too, because they're not in these Villeneuve versions at all.
Yes.
Right. And so like they are once again, like another example of they're not machinery. Like when they fold space, when they travel to different planets, they use those navigator guys. They're the ones that kind of chart the path through space, and they can do it because they've taken so much spice that they look like these weird kind of fetus guys, you know?
Yeah.
And just to go along with your point that you just made, the reason why the Emperor is kind of like cowed by that guild navigator guy is because even though there's an Emperor and there's all these royal houses and shit, the guild with all the spice is like super, super fucking powerful in the books and in the okay. Lynch movie too.
Okay.
In these movies, I don't even know if they're mentioned ever.
I don't think they're mentioned at all.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't really do much with like space travel in this. In this one, they just kind of like show like a massive those ships are called Highliners, and they show up in this movie and the last movie, and you just see ships kind of coming out of them, but then that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's just talk about Christopher Walken though. What else did you think about his performance? Or like, do you think that he was on the screen enough? Like, what do you think?
They maybe could have had him on the screen a little more. I didn't quite understand why he shows up at the end.
Yeah.
And I know that's jumping later into the movie, but like there's a point where he comes to Arrakis and I don't understand. And it seems like Paul summoned him, but I don't understand why or how, or why he listened.
Sure. They kind of mention it in this movie, in the Villeneuve movie, but, and like in the Lynch movie, it just kind of seems like, okay, well the Harkonnens are messing up so much. He's there to sort of like fix their mess. Right.
Yeah.
In the Sci-Fi Channel version and in this version, it's implied that like Paul is basically leaking out information that like he was responsible for his dad getting murdered. So it's like he shows up to kind of be like, shut the fuck up, you know, like, you know, this is supposed to be a secret. But he also says to Paul, I mean, we're jumping all around, but like he says to Paul at the end, like, your dad is weak. Do you kind of feel like Leto in all of these movies comes off as like a weak guy?
I don't think so, but I can see the point that the Emperor, the Walken Emperor, is making, that like he's guided by love, and I can see that is being true. I don't agree with it, the statement that it makes someone weak, but I can see that correlation there.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I'm really glad that you just said that, because you're like, I don't believe that. It's kind of like your own personal principles. You don't believe that.
Yeah.
But I think that that's kind of a message. And I don't know if it comes off in the Lynch version, but I think it definitely comes off in this version, where like having emotions, having sentiment, they're like kind of weaknesses in Dune. And like with Arrakis, because we spend so much time with the Fremen, like, it's just like cold and unforgiving with them. They're in the middle of the desert, the hottest place ever, but they are just fucking cold as ice, man.
Like Foreigner.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. See, we referenced Toto. We already got Foreigner. Yes.
Yeah. But like Captain Rock Bond said.
Yes, yes. But what I was going to say to you, though, is like, doesn't that kind of come off with the Fremen, that like, it's just like they're just like ruthless, and there's like, there's no mercy, that it's just like very by the books. It's like, okay, this happens and this happens. There's no leeway.
Yeah. I mean, they live in, like you said, the harshest environments possible, and they have to survive with very little. And I think that would kind of breed that kind of culture.
Yeah. Yeah. Like in the books, they spend a lot of time with the Fremen. And in this movie, they do way, way more than they did in the Lynch version.
Yeah.
And they show this shit where they're like, you know, taking the water from the bodies and stuff. And like, it's real creepy. It's almost like vampiric, you know?
Yeah. It was a little weird. Yeah. Especially there was one guy that seemed like he was alive.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then yeah. He had that bucket on too tight, that Dune bucket, yeah. You know? but you know, it's funny because this movie, it starts off with like, Princess Rulin talking, and you see a little bit of the Emperor and stuff in the beginning, but then it cuts to Arrakis, and it seems like it's like right after that first movie ends.
Yes.
And they're like traveling through the desert, and the Harkonnens find them. And I have to say that like this one opening sequence, once it happened, I was like, fuck, I am on board. Like, what'd you think about that sequence where they're in the desert and the Harkonnens just kind of start flying up the mountain like that?
Yeah, you really don't see anybody flying in the Lynch version other than Baron Harkonnen. So right. It was interesting to see that. And then also just the bodies repeatedly falling down was like really like visceral.
Yes.
Very loud thud. Like I mentioned that I saw in the Dolby, like that, I felt that when the bodies hit the ground.
Yes. Let the bodies hit the floor. But I was going to say that, like, I saw this with my friend Jay, and I don't think that they really explain this in this version. Maybe they do in the David Lynch version. But do you remember the guns that the Fremen and, like, the Harkonnens and stuff use, where it's like a beam, and it's like kind of like almost like a sniper beam. It's just like, and it, like, takes people out?
Yes.
So those are called las guns, right? And they maybe mention the Lynch version, but... The thing with las guns is you can't shoot that at someone wearing a shield, because if you do, there'll be like an atomic explosion.
Oh, I did not know the consequences of that, but I was assuming that because I remember the line from the Lynch version, which they don't really say in the new one. The slow blade penetrates the shield.
Yes,
and I remember that, so I imagine it's a laser beam and. Essentially, he's going to refract off this shield. So
yes.
But in this case, that it would cause an atomic explosion. That's crazy. That's like an extreme repercussion that might have been like good to know.
Yeah. I think the most you get in this version is someone says, "Don't use las guns." I think one of the Harkonnen says that in the beginning. But. What I really like about the Denis Villeneuve versions, like both movies, is that they have sequences where people are like pushing things through the shields, and you see it kind of like there's like friction, and then it passes through and it gets to stuff. I love that. Then they do it like five times in these two movies.
My favorite one was actually when Chani fires the like bazooka at one of those orthocopters, whatever they're called.
That's right.
That particular one, though, I'm like, oh man, this is awesome.
Exactly. Yes. It reminds me of in the first one, there's two really great sequences where one is the doctor, Dr. Yui, shoots a dart at Leto. They say Leto in this. And, you know, you see it and it kind of like goes and it gets him eventually. And you're like, fuck. And then there's another part where like Duncan is fighting people and then he like gets that blade through and cuts a guy's throat, you know?
Yes.
Just so good. But well, now we're talking about shields and shit. I just really liked that sequence and I was all on board. And then all of a sudden we have to see Paul and Jessica essentially adapt to the Fremen or they're going to die. And this is where we get one of the first major changes from the book and from the Lynch version and every other version, where they make Jessica like way more sinister in this version.
Yeah, I actually really, really liked, Rebecca Ferguson's performance here, especially that first scene where she drinks the water of life. Like, I was chilled with that.
Yes.
And, yeah, she seems like they kind of tote this line of, like, where she sounds crazy and sinister at the same time, but not evil, really?
Yes.
And really good, in my opinion.
Yes. So back to my lecturing and stuff. One of the things that I think is so interesting about this movie is that they reference like 15 times at least. They're like, oh, the Bene Gesserit Brian's finally leaving. He's like, oh man, Pete's talking about Dune so much. I'm just going to go shoot myself with the Megatron gun over here. But basically, and this is cool. I could actually lecture while he's muted and stuff. That like the Bene Gesserit, they've been like planting the seeds and these ideas of this like Messiah figure. And that's that the idea is that like when the Kwisatz Haderach does come, then they can like take over and the Fremen will let that happen. You know?
Yeah.
So like, it's interesting because so much of this movie is like people being manipulated by ideas, like religious ideas. But with the Bene Gesserit, there's like legitimate, like they are actually making a person that's going to have superpowers. And eventually it's Paul that is that person.
Yeah. And also it was just interesting that like they talk about the northern and the southern peoples on Arrakis, the Fremen anyway, and then how the southern people are so indoctrinated already by the seeds that the Bene Gesserit have planted. Like, I thought that was so interesting. It just shows that, like, yeah, they really have been doing this for 90 generations.
Yes, yes. And Javier Bardem is, like, such a great example of, like, a devout follower, right? Did you like Stilgar?
Yeah, he was great. Oddly, like, there was, like, one laugh in my theater when there's a point where Paul was like, I'm not this guy. I'm not the Messiah, all this. And then he's like, and then he goes this little thing. He's like, but if he really is the Messiah, he wouldn't say it. Like, but my theater actually laughed at that. I thought that was a good moment there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I feel like Stilgar was almost like the comic relief.
He sort of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, you're right. Like, the differences between, like, the two, like, the North and the South, and then there's, like, this sort of more religious Fremen, and then just the people that are like, hey, we're just Fremen. Like, Zendaya represents the people that are like, we're just the Fremen people. Who cares about your prophecy? We have to worry about our planet. I felt like with Zendaya, like everyone else feels like they're of this world, but every so often Zendaya kind of felt like it was Zendaya versus like someone in Dune, you know?
I didn't quite get that, but I felt she fit the part to me, and I didn't feel like she stood out at any point necessarily, but her actions kind of contradicted her on occasion. Like, there's one point where she's basically saying, oh, we don't believe this prophecy, and then they send Paul on some like test to go like cross some sand dune and overnight or something.
Yeah,
and she goes to help him.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't understand why she would doubt him but also help him at the same time. Basically become, she helped him become what he does at the end.
Yes.
But you know, she doesn't believe it.
Yes. Really good point. And yeah, she definitely regrets it. And we can talk about that because I feel like that is the most distinct change from the books and the other movies too. But like, what's interesting to me is, did this at all ever feel like the Matrix, or did you get like kind of Matrix vibes ever watching this? Was there anything that you're like, hey, this reminds me of the Matrix?
Maybe a little.
Yeah. And the whole reason why I'm bringing that up is because in the Matrix, you also have this idea of like this promised one, this Messiah figure. And there are people that like believe it, like Morpheus. Morpheus is like Stilgar. Then you have people that
that's so obvious to me now. I didn't even think of that part, but
right.
Yes.
And then you have people that are like, it doesn't matter. Like what matters is what we have to do. And that's like Trinity and Chani. And so in the Matrix, Trinity sees the Oracle, and the Oracle says that, like, you will fall in love with the One. And in this, they're like, her name is, like, fucking, like, Desert Spring. That's, like, her Fremen name.
Yeah.
And they're like, Desert Spring's tears will bring back the, I'm trying to think, Lizan Gibb, right? That's, like, that's the Fremen prophecy guy. And so it's like, it's very similar to Trinity, where it's like, if this woman falls in love with this guy, that means he's the one.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, now that you mentioned that statement there, like, is the Matrix just not sci-fi, more cyberpunk Dune?
Right. Well, Dune just like influences everything. And like my friend Jay, he messaged me today and he's like, yeah, this guy's like Littlefinger from Game of Thrones. I'm like, Game of Thrones is really influenced by Dune.
Yeah, you know? Definitely.
So that's one of the major differences is Chani and like the way she interacts with Paul. But then like Paul's sister is like just not in this. She's just basically a baby in a womb in this one.
Yeah, and there's that one scene in A Vision where she's you see Anya Taylor-Joy.
I've had
this cold for like 2 weeks. It's terrible.
Oh, I'm sorry, man. Jeez. Well, what'd you think about that sequence with Anya Taylor-Joy, though?
It was just kind of encouraging him, to accept his destiny, because he was kind of like riding this, you know, the line was like, I know if I do this, billions of people will die. And it was interesting to me too, like the vision he sees, he's following someone south in the desert. I'm like, well, what the hell is that? I'm like, oh shit, that's his mom.
Yep. Yep. Like,
wow. That's creepy.
Yep. Yep. And they just like perfectly nailed it, because they got Rebecca Ferguson, who I think she's like a cut above. She's like one top five favorite actresses right now. So good. I love her in Dr. Sleep. She's so good in this and the Mission Impossible movies.
Honestly, I have to bring this back. She was in Silo, which is a book series that you recommended to me.
And I didn't read. Stacey, we should review that so that you could just fucking ramble on for a while and I could just sit there like, oh, yeah. Like, is that why you muted it for a second and went off to the side? Because you're just like, oh, I can't fucking take this.
No, it's just because my nose was running and I had to blow my nose.
Oh, okay. There you go. Okay.
All right. I may have to do it again in a minute. So if I do it, just keep going.
I like that version better. Okay. So, but we're talking about how awesome Rebecca Ferguson is. There's this one part in this movie that I fucking love where, like, she's talking to Paul and Paul's basically saying, like, you know, you're manipulating these people. This is wrong. And then she's like, I'll see you at the seats or whatever where we're going. And then she's like, all of us. She says it like with the voice. Do you remember that part?
Yes.
Oh, fucking love that. So yeah, creepy.
They use the voice to great effect in this movie. Mm-hmm. And the way it sounds is fantastic.
Yep. It's just like, because it's the idea of like, they are literally called witches, like Bene Gesserit witches. And like, they possess the knowledge and stuff of all their ancestors in them. They can access it like a computer, be like, okay, this person, this is what happened to them. And it's like they kind of speak through them. It's, oh, I love it. I love it. So let's talk about when Paul rides the worm, right? There's the David Lynch version and then there's this version. I'm assuming that you liked this version better, right?
Yeah, it looks a bit better in this. It looks a little goofy in the Lynch version, which is fine because it's the technology of the time. Like, I can absolutely forgive that.
Yeah.
But it looks way cooler and is way more epic in this version. I feel like they didn't even really like train him to do it. He just started doing it in the Lynch version. I could be wrong about that, but just the whole ritual of doing it was really cool to see.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't think I asked you this before, but what worm design do you like better? Do you like the worm design in this movie or in the David Lynch?
Man, I might actually pick the Lynch one.
Yep. Ditto.
Because again, the practical effect is just, it has something, does something to me, you know?
Yeah. I like the actual design of the Lynch worms more than I like the worms in this, but like, obviously the worms in this look more realistic and
yeah.
You know? So we keep talking about the Lynch version. I should have made a different thumb for this and like had both versions, but like, Patrick Stewart plays Gurney Halleck in the Lynch version. And this, we have Josh Brolin. Out of those two, do you have a preference?
I mean, I'm always going to go with Captain Carr and Professor X in any situation there, but Josh Brolin is fantastic here. And I really dug the scene where he faces off against Robin towards the end. Although I wish the fight was a little more prolonged than that, but.
Oh yeah.
But like, just him walking up the stairs, going to deal, I'm like, oh yes, this is going down.
Yes. And he just stabs him right in the throat. So spoilers for that.
Yeah.
And it's funny because you say Robin, because like that's what they say in this version, but then they say Raban in the Lynch version. There's little differences with pronunciations. You know, when he says going to fight
Harkonnen, it's Harkonnen in the Lynch one, it's Harkonnen in this.
Yeah. And that's kind of how I pronounce it. I always used to just say Harkonnen, but now everyone says Harkonnen. But like Josh Brolin as Gurney, you know, obviously, yeah, we like Patrick Stewart more because he's Patrick Stewart, right?
Yeah.
But in this, even he's kind of different. They make him more of like a seductive force where it's kind of like, don't worry about this Fremen prophecy stuff. Let's worry about getting revenge for your father. We can use these nukes to get revenge for your father. Like, that's kind of his role in this. Whereas in the other books and the movies, he's like kind of more noble seeming.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that statement.
Yeah. And then we get Elvis himself, a new character, Austin Butler playing Fade Rautha. Rautha, there you go. And they call him the Na Baron because he's going to become the Baron one day. What did you think of this guy, Brian?
Holy shit, was he creepy.
Yes.
He was so good, though.
Yes.
It's so interesting that this is the same character that Sting played.
Yes.
He was definitely unnerving and really good. And I feel like this version does a better characterization of him. In the Lynch version, he just kind of like shows up. He's like, I'm going to kill Paul Atreides. And that's it.
Yes.
Like, why?
Yes.
I get your families are an odds here, but like, why? Why?
Yes.
And here they kind of like you don't know in the Lynch version that he's going to become a Baron later on. Like, you have no idea. But they just say it's the Baron's nephew, and that's it. And I'm going to kill Paul Atreides, and that's it.
Yeah.
Here they're kind of grooming him to come into power, and I didn't pick up on this at all in the Lynch version if they showed it, but I didn't realize that he was another prospect of the Inquisitor Haderach.
Yes, yes, yes. So that brings on like maybe I think I have like two more lectures in me. There's one more, but don't you just love in the Lynch version where like Sting shows up and he's all like ripped and stuff, but he's got this leather diaper on, and like the steam rises up behind him, like shh, and he's like, yeah, I'm Fade. Yeah, yeah. It's like for like, you know, Danny loves wrestling. It's like when a wrestler comes out and like the smoke comes up or whatever.
Yeah, it was really like very homoerotic.
Yes, yes. Okay, well, I'm glad you used the word homoerotic. Speaking of homoerotic, one change I noticed they made with this is that the Baron, he like kind of kills women in this. And in the Lynch version, he kills like a boy. I think he kills like at least one boy. And then in the books and stuff, it's always that he's focused on young boys and he kills and hurts them. And I think that if I'm guessing, they probably changed it to like women in this, because even though it's despicable, he's killing innocent people. I think they didn't want to make it like, oh, well, he's gay and that's why he's evil. Like, they wanted to kind of like not make that connection there.
Yeah, I you're probably right. Although I think that's a stupid reason to do it.
You know? Oh, yeah, I know. It should just be kind of like the books. In the books, it's like he's not interested in women at all. Oh man, I'm making a third lecture here.
From the Lynch version, I got this very like Greek epic kind of vibe from it, and yeah. I don't know, maybe that was part of it too, because all that kind of stuff was very prevalent in, you know, in those Greek plays and all that, you know.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well. Yeah. There is definitely this kind of like Greek kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah. Like the different houses are almost like the gods in the pantheon, and they all kind of struggle with each other, and the emperor's kind of like Zeus. Yeah, it's a good way of putting that, man.
Yeah.
But like, what do you think of the difference between the Harkonnens in this and the Lynch version?
Well, I mean, they look a lot more imposing in this newer version. You know, they were gingers with a shaved line in their heads in the old one. They look kind of weird, honestly. but at the same time, though, I kind of loved the Lynch Baron Harkonnen.
Yes.
So
much. Yeah.
He's so fucking weird and out there.
Yeah.
And I although, you know, they have Stellan
Skarsgård.
They do have him. He's very good, and they do have him kind of floating around a little bit. It was so much. I liked it better in the other version because it looks so weird and maniacal, and he just looked off kilter. And I actually prefer that version of the character, oddly.
Right. That's kind of what I think of when I think of the Baron, is that, because they always talk about he has red hair and stuff. So here's my one of like two remaining lectures. In the prequel books and stuff that the son has written, they explain why the Baron is floating around like that. And he's so fat and shit, right? Oh, so he's going off screen to be like, oh God, I can't fucking take this anymore. I'm going to tell him I'm blowing my nose, but this sucks. Anyway, so the reason why he's all fucked up looking like that and fat and floating around is because at one point the Reverend Mother, the Bene Gesserit woman that's like in charge of the sisterhood, she goes and visits him and is able to have sex with him, but he like kind of overwhelms her and like demeans her and is horrible to her while they're having sex. And she uses her Bene Gesserit body chemical stuff to essentially give him this horrible disease that makes him all fat and like deformed and stuff. So that's why he's like that. Yeah.
Okay. So So I have two questions here. One, maybe jumping ahead of here. So
do it.
The black goo. What is that?
It's venom. it's just venom, you know? No, I don't know. Honestly, it's like their planet.
So basically, in the new one here, he was jumping into a lobster tank.
Yes, exactly. He's like, yes. No, it's just I don't remember it having any kind of significance in the books. It might be like one of their imports or something. Like all the houses have their own thing that they make. And like that might be their thing besides spice, because like they control Arrakis, right? Yeah. But it doesn't have any kind of like real importance, the black goo.
It was interesting because like they clearly show it in the Lynch version. Like it's like kind of bubbling under that panel, which they kept throwing things into it, oddly. I'm like, is this garbage disposal? Like, what is this?
Yeah.
He also kind of bathes in it and like goes under this like shower, like rain shower thing of this black goo. And then he goes kills that boy with ripping out his heart plug, which I also kind of enjoyed that weird, demented kind of thing that they added in the Lynch version.
Yeah.
It really like weird and crazy and off kilter. And I kind of liked it.
Yeah. Well, I wonder, because you watched like it on HBO Max. I don't know. I think this isn't a deleted scene in the Lynch version, but they have Thufir as a prisoner in
I do remember that, yes.
Okay, do you remember that one of the Harkonnens, I think it might be fucking Raban, comes in with like a cat that's in a machine that's being milked?
Yes!
Okay. So I didn't just like dream that. I didn't just like have a hallucination.
I forgot about that. I don't know how I did, because how do you forget something as weird as that?
Right. It's just so fucking weird. And I think that is a David Lynch idea. I don't think that's in the books or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But, I mean, there's all this weird shit, but then with Fade in this, then you have almost like, it's kind of like, it kept reminding me of like Tron Legacy, where there's like an arena and there's this part where he's like getting ready to go into the arena and there's these women that are kind of dressing him up. That's very similar to like in Tron Legacy.
Yep.
But I really, really fucking love like the black and white effect of like them being on Giedi Prime. And like, there's just one part, like they're celebrating his birthday and his victory and like there's fireworks, but they're like little fucking oil block fireworks.
That was a really cool effect.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Were you confused at all about the scene with Fade and the woman that seduces him, which her last name's Fenring?
Fenring, yeah. No, I wasn't. It seemed pretty clear after they explained that, you know, after the fact that, you know, he's another prospect for the Quizmas Haderach, and that even if he dies in this upcoming conflict, because he's a very risky kind of person, they've secured the bloodline because she got impregnated by him.
Yeah, exactly. And so like one of the things I didn't mention before was when the Reverend Mother was having sex with the Baron, which led to him looking like that. The purpose of that was so that she could give birth to Jessica. And the idea was that Jessica would have a daughter and that the kid of like that daughter would get with Fade, and then their kid would be this Kwisatz Haderach.
Oh, so Jessica skipped a generation essentially there.
Exactly. That's and go ahead.
Something that I feel like I know they said it in the Lynch version, but I feel like I didn't remember it or it didn't really process to me that they are that Paul and Jessica are Harkonnens. I was shocked when I saw them. Like I knew this sort of, but I didn't remember it, I guess, which is weird. But I feel like they kind of gloss over that in the Lynch version, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they don't. I don't think they mentioned it at all in the David Lynch version. I remember reading it in a book and being like, "Whoa, what? What is this shit?" Yeah, but essentially, she's the daughter of the Baron.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, and then like when you read the books and stuff, you're like, "Wait, that doesn't make sense. He's not into women at all." But then it's like the Reverend Mother basically like was able to seduce him to kind of force him to impregnate her. But then with Fade, that happens with I can't remember her fucking first name, but like her last name is Fenring. And here's the thing, Brian. Here's my second to last lecture, is that there's a guy that's not in the Lynch version or this version. And his name is Hasimir Fenring, and he's the Emperor's like advisor. And he's one of my favorite fucking Dune guys. And he's that guy's husband.
Oh,
Yeah.
Oh, she's already spoken for. Okay.
Okay. Go ahead.
I did not pick up on that.
Well, they don't show it.
Okay, get it.
Yeah, he's not at all. And like, he's a real fucking interesting character. And he himself had the potential to be a Kwisatz Haderach as well. But then he was born, what's the word when like your penis doesn't work? Whatever I am, feral? Ladies, you know, like
impotent, sterile.
Yeah, like something like almost like a eunuch or something, like, because I think he does, like, there's something wrong with his actual penis. I can't believe at this point in the discussion, but he can't like have sex, but he's married to this woman, and she's the one that gets with Fade to just have the kid, but she loves Hosamir Fenring.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, if you ever read the books, he's like one of my favorite characters, but he's not in his fucking movies at all.
I wonder why. I mean, I guess she didn't have that much screen time as herself, and I guess I can see why they wouldn't include him if even she didn't have that much to do.
Yeah, because they barely have.
And wasn't even that much with the Emperor either. Yeah,
that's exactly what I was about to say. So, I know I've been rambling around and stuff. So let's just talk about how we get the final battle, right? So the movie's like leading up to this final battle. Do you feel like the battle itself was worth all of the buildup, all of the 2+ hours to get to it?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yes. Honestly, too, my favorite scene in the movie was when Paul finally kind of accepts his role in all this, and he walks into that like gathering of leaders, and they're like, "Oh, you can't speak. You're not one of the tribe leaders." And he's like, "I don't give a shit," and he just goes off. I was ready to fucking join the front lines, man.
Yeah.
I would be fired.
Yeah, and he does this thing where he's like pointing out individual guys, like, "Your grandfather did this, and he fell on a rock, and he did this," and he's like, "You have these nightmares about this," like he's like calling everybody out.
Yeah,
and it's so funny watching the people's reactions. Like, "Holy shit, he's desert Jesus." Well, I mean, Jesus already is a kind of a desert guy.
Yeah,
he's like, he's much. Space Jesus, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, Spice Jesus. So, Spice
Jesus, that's perfect.
There you go. Yeah. So they go and they follow him, and then there's this huge ass battle. There's a fucking awesome scene where the Sardaukar are like looking up into the storm, and then the fucking worms come out.
Yes,
like you mentioned before.
Yeah, my wife mentioned that she looked over at me while that scene was on, and she just saw a hysterical look on my face because my jaw was just like.
That's fucking awesome. Yeah, it was epic as shit, man. And then you get to this aftermath of the battle where the Duke Paul confronts the Emperor. It basically, everything gets resolved, and it plays out very similar to the Lynch version. Did you like the way this played out in this version?
Yeah, I think so. I think it makes more sense for Paul to get revenge on the Emperor rather than the sister, who is, you know, not born yet in this version. And I liked, what did he say? He said something that was very poignant to him. I'm sorry, not the Emperor. The
Baron.
The Baron. He says, you know, "Hello, grandfather." And he says, what does he say? Something about like, oh, man, I don't remember what it is.
He says something like, "You die like an animal," or something.
Yeah,
like
that. Yeah. That was very good, I thought.
Yeah, he just stabs him right in the fucking throat. It's real brutal. And then
stabbings in this movie.
Yes. And they show the Baron in the desert later on, and there's ants crawling on him. And I was thinking that because the ant grows into his ear, I was thinking that might have been like a little like love letter from Villeneuve to Lynch, because David Lynch has the movie Blue Velvet, which there's a very famous scene where there's like an ear in the woods, like on the ground, and there's ants crawling all over it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, or maybe it's not in the woods. It's in like a garden. But I was thinking that was a little reference there. But, you know, Paul confronts the Emperor. They threaten to like nuke the spice and stuff. How'd you think about all that going down? Like, how'd you feel about that?
I liked it. I was all in at that point. I also had to comment, I love that, you know, the Baron gets his little machine cut off there. And then, you know, everyone's attention is on Paul and the Fremen coming in, and he's just like slowly crawling towards the throne. Fantastic. I thought that the ending was great. The conflict there, the choosing the champions, all that, very similar to how it played on the Lynch version. It was excellent.
Yeah, the knife battle between Paul and Fade is really intense in this too.
Yeah, totally.
And they're fighting. And he just like he just straight up stabs Paul, you know, and Paul's just like, he keeps fighting him, you know. Yeah.
He doesn't quite stab him in the neck though, so.
Yeah, it wasn't a neck stabbing this time around. But really fucking good. So this brings us to our last ticker, last lecture too, is that Chani acts very differently by this third act, and what ends up happening with her and Paul is very different from the book.
Well, it also very different from the Lynch version where he makes it rain.
Yes. That's a little too much right there. Yeah.
I saw that coming. I felt like that was coming because, as we mentioned before, her motivations and actions were kind of at odds with each other. But I could totally see there, and you know, she was shocked. She would, you know, they had that kind of shock on her face, look on her face when he says, "I will take your daughter as my my wife, and we'll rule the empire together." And then it almost makes it seem like it was like a jealousy thing, but I don't think it was. I think she just thinks he's gotten in over his head, and she just doesn't want a part of it.
Yeah. Well, I think the main thing is that they're using religion to control the Fremen. And the mom, there's this really great scene in the beginning of the movie where she is like, "I'm going to prey on the weak and the people on the outside first to get them under my control." And Chani sees through this. She sees through the religious manipulation. I think it's really an anger towards that. And this movie kind of jumps ahead with the books and stuff, because by the next book in Dune, there are Fremen going to different planets and having this jihad in Paul's name, in Mordib's name. And in this movie, they're like running onto the ships, and Harvey R. Burnham's like, "This is fucking awesome. We're going to kill everybody." You know? And Chani is just like so turned off by this that she leaves and like goes to get a worm. And that's the last shot, is Chani's face as the movie ends. And Chani in the books and in the movies, regardless of how she feels about Paul and his control of the Fremen, she's still like a devoted wife and like, you know, in love with him.
Yeah.
So that's the main difference for me between the books and this movie, is like Chani's like, "Fuck this, I'm going off to live in the desert."
Yeah, it was interesting. I also think because the movie ends with that shot, I feel like it heavily implies that they are going to make another one.
Yeah, well, Denis Villeneuve has written a next one.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, that's news to me.
Yeah. And it would probably be based on Dune, Dune Messiah, which is the second one. Yeah. And then just as a little thing, I know I keep talking about the Sci-Fi Channel miniseries. There was a Sci-Fi Channel miniseries based on Dune. And then for the second miniseries they did, it was like Dune Messiah and Children of Dune together too.
Okay, I'm going to have to watch that.
I think it's worth it. It's a little cheesy, but I think it's worth it.
No, I mean, just to see what happens next, really. I mean, I could read the books too, but
yeah, they're a little dense. I believe me, it was tough for me to read them, but I just love that world so much.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, anyway, we are almost at that hour mark, so I think we could wrap it up. Was there any last thing you want to say about Dune, Brian?
No, just I'm a Dune convert now. It's been a wild 2-week ride, and I want more.
Yes, he's going to continue riding the worm. I'm so happy. This gives us another thing that we both like together. But we have more fun stuff coming up on Comic Books Transformed. What do we have coming up?
Invincible.
Fuck yeah. Yes, I'm ready for part 2 of season 2 of Invincible. So if you guys enjoyed this little Dune lesson today, come join us on Comic Books Transformed. We're going to cover Invincible, a whole bunch of other comic book related media coming up. And I guess we'll see you guys next time. I'll hit end stream and it'll actually work. There we go. Oh, under an hour. Well, I keep clicking end stream and it's not doing it. There we go.